Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents Windswept by Adam Rakunas. Narrated by Nanette Savard. With performances by Jonathan Foyer, David Jordan, Alyssa Wilmoth, Tia Shearer, Thomas Penny, Nora Ashrati, Tracy Oliveira, Yasmin Twazon, Todd Schofield, Lily Beacon, Christopher Graybill, Marnie Penning, Dawn Ursula, Kenyatta Rogers, Peter Holdway, Barbara Pinolini, Colleen Delaney, Rose Elizabeth Supan, Michael John Casey, Nathaniel Perry, Richard Rowan, Scott McCormick, Terrence Aselford, and Mort Shelby. Book 1, Windswept.
I had been sitting at my usual stool at Big Lily's, talking with Odd Dupree about his troubles down at the plant, when something big and stupid came crashing through the front door. Vitae Bloombeck's head swiveled like a pumpkin mounted on a sack of compost as he scanned the faces of the regulars. I tried to duck beneath the iron palm bar, but it was too late. He had zeroed in on me. Then he started moving toward me like a runaway cargo can.
Padma! I got something! Make us both righteously wealthy like Jesus would want!
He shoved Odd to the side as he plopped into two chairs. Odd's eyes rolled back into his head from the smell. Bloombeck's job was to fish blockages out of the city's sewer mains, a contract slot he'd kept since time immemorial because no one was stupid or desperate enough to take it from him.
Not even Jesus wants you, Bloomy. Ow!
Pain flared in my right eyeball. My personal artificial intelligence, or PI, was supposed to float text warning me that Bloombeck was within 100 meters. But thanks to the vagaries of my brain chemistry and the implant's firmware, the damn thing always gave me an electric jab in the retina after he'd shown up. I'd complained to every tech I know, and they all shrugged their shoulders and gave me the Santee Anchorage song and dance about how we don't have the proper tech, we don't make enough to care about your problem, just wait for the next bloody update. The oh god it's bloomy warning squatted between a migraine and my period on the pain scale, and the only treatment that worked was avoiding him.
You want to talk to me, you make an appointment.
You're looking mighty fine today, Padma.
Oh, stow it.
I held my mug against my right temple, hoping the warmth would soothe my headache. If my pie hadn't continued to be so useful, I would have paid a doc to jab a needle in my eye and burn the damn thing off my optic nerve. Maybe I could do that when I retired. If I retired.
Whatever you have can wait until I'm done with Odd.
I pointed to the other end of the bar, the part closest to the open lanai. The fresh air off the ocean would help mitigate his scent.
Oh, all right.
He walked away, leaving a wake of distressed people. Odd ran a finger through his thick gray beard, pushing aside the bristles that covered his faded indenture tattoo, a caduceus. He hadn't been a doctor or a nurse, but a pharmaceutical test subject for Liaocan. The long years of his indenture had left him a nervous, twitching wreck. Odd had been lucky to walk into his slot, where the heaviest thing he had to operate was the crayon he used to mark pipes slated for replacement.
So, you think you can get me moved to a different shift, maybe?
Getting you off graveyard's gonna be tough. You just don't have the seniority.
I'm the oldest guy there.
I blinked up his profile on the public.
Yeah, but you've only been on Santee 6 years. It's a long line ahead of you, Odd.
Glenn wants us home at the same time. Is that too much to ask? I do good work. I don't grumble. Doesn't that count for something?
Of course it does.
I gave Odd a calm smile in the hopes he'd relax. I'd already plied him with two fingers of Uncle and Becky's finest kind blend, but it just made his eyelids droop while the rest of him twitched.
But there are people who have been here 20 who are waiting for someone to take their slot, and you know how much the traffic's dried up.
Oh, I don't want to be a bother. I know things are tight for everyone. It's just... Oh, I wonder sometimes, was this worth it? breaching and coming here?
You really think you would have been happy if you'd stayed on that lab ship, getting stuck with every weird antiviral and arousal pill they cranked out? You think you'd still be alive? You think you'd have found Glenn?
No.
I know working graveyard sucks. I did it too. I pulled a lot of crap shifts all over, at the brush factory, at the lifter base, even in Steelcase. I ever tell you I drove a crane for 2 years?
Uh-huh.
And all that time, no matter how tired or dirty or sober I got, I never once thought I'd made a mistake coming here. I took a sip of tea, hoping Odd would buy all this. You have a good hard think about it, you'll agree. Breaching is never a mistake.
Yeah, but I still want to see my husband at breakfast in the morning. I'll take whatever you got. I'll even go to a refinery.
Odd, you know I wouldn't do that to you. I know the treatment plant isn't the greatest, but Jesus, you really want to go to a place like Sow's Reach? You think your gig's bad now.
I hear Sirene's a fair guy. He tries to work with everyone.
Just wait until the harvest rush, when they're working past capacity, and you haven't slept in a week, and you're slipping and sliding all over the place and trip right into the holding tanks. You slip in the water at our plant, you'll smell horrible, but you'll come out alive. You won't if it's molasses. You move out of Brushhead into that shithole, he will own you, and I couldn't let that happen to you.
Well, then what can you do?
I blinked up every slot listing I could think of. No one at the treatment plant would want to trade away a decent slot, not even if I paid them off. I could probably talk to another ward chair, see if they'd be willing to swap bodies, but I knew everyone held on to whatever they had. Ever since the Big Three decided our blessed little mudball wasn't on an economically viable route, refueling traffic had gotten lighter and lighter, and that meant contract slots had gotten scarcer and scarcer. I heard whisperings that the only thing keeping Santee Anchorage from getting cut out completely was the fact that we sent more industrial molasses into occupied space than anyone within a 6-jump radius. I suppose if I stuck with the Union long enough, I'd be promoted to those circles. But I had other plans, and all of them involved me no longer giving a shit. Wait, shit, there. A job flitted past my eyes, and I rewound it back. Nicola Witt is going on maternity leave. She'll be out for a year.
Oh, she does pollution control at the bottom of the plant. Her job stinks more than Bloomberg's.
Odd, it's not like you'll be wading into the ponds without protection. You'll get a full environment suit and a rebreather. Well, you'll get her suit, because we can't afford a new one,
but... I don't know, Padma. What happens when she comes back?
By the time she does, there'll be people to fill her slot and yours.
Oh, you got a line on something?
Bloombeck materialized out of nowhere. Ow! Damn it! The smell hit me just before the needles in my optic nerve.
Padma, I really need to tell you this.
Is it about your back dues? Last I checked, you're coming up on 5 years' worth, and we haven't even talked about penalties. Bloombeck scratched his face. His ink, a pair of crossed hedge clippers under a Union fist, redshifted under his grubby fingernails. I could never remember which of the Big Three he'd worked for before he'd breached his indenture, but you could tell they hadn't valued him even then. The inkwork was uneven, like someone had just stamped his face with a spiked rubber pad before sending him away. At least when Walwa had tattooed me, they'd taken their sweet time, the bastards. Bloombeck pointed at his temple.
I just texted you for an appointment. You're free right now.
Since when?
Since your 4 o'clock canceled.
I blinked up my calendar and saw that, sure enough, Estella Tongao had stood me up again. Bloombeck had snaked her spot. I wondered for the umpteenth time why our Union forebears hadn't allowed me the power to beat the ever-loving crap out of people like Bloombeck. I knew that all kinds of people from all kinds of backgrounds breached from the Big Three, and that we had to embrace everyone. But sweet and merciful Buddha, Vitae Bloombeck would have made even them change their minds. I will be with you in one moment.
But
Bloombeck, if you don't shove off, I will call up Sony Bagram and have her arrest your ass.
For what?
For loitering with intent to annoy. Wait your turn.
Bagram wouldn't do that.
You want to bet? You want me to call up the nice police captain and ask her who she's more likely to listen to? I turned back to Odd. You want the gig or not?
You're the best, Padma. When do I start?
I blinked over a few forms to fill out. Get that back to me by tomorrow, and you can get rolling next week. Odd hugged me, then danced out of the bar. I looked back at Bloombeck. Now, what can I do for you? And it'd better involve you turning into a giant stack of money, because I'm not interested in whatever scam you're cooking up.
What makes you think I got a scam?
Because you're talking.
What if I told you I knew about a bunch of people who wanted to breach?
How could you come by info like that?
I got ears everywhere, and these ears tell me there's a Wawa colony cedar 6 days out.
Anyone can see the shipping queue, Bloomy.
But can they see there's been grumbling ever since they came in from the red line? I heard it coming through the wireless.
How can you get reception all the way down there?
The piping. It does something weird to the signals. But look, these people know the union runs this place, and 40 people want to jump ship. That's a good digit, yeah? Help you make your number.
It would, but only if I knew how much this would all cost me.
Only 350 yuan. That's how much it'll take to bribe the radar control officer at Sandport.
Stop. I looked out the window toward the lifter. Even though the giant black ribbon of coral carbon was 20 clicks offshore, its massive width filled the south window as it reached into space. The crawler platforms glinted in the late afternoon sky as they brought empty fuel tanks down to the water and full tanks and cargo cans to the sky. It was a sight that would have filled me with calm and contentment but for the sweaty presence of Bloombeck. I think you've said enough.
So you're in?
No. I said stop because now I've hit my monthly limit for hearing your stupid shit. Get lost.
But you haven't even heard the deal.
Bloomy, if it involves the words bribe and radar control officer, then I don't need to hear any more. Now get the hell out of here. You're blocking my breeze. This was the time of day when the land began to cool, sending the wind back out to sea. Big Lily had all the windows open, so I got a nose full of Brushhead's afternoon scents. The laundry house up on Taupo Road, where the proprietor kept plumeria. Hints of naan and baguettes from Giesel Dumark's bakery. There was the sweetness of citrus from the shareholder terrace farms, the tang of arcing steel from the shops of Repair Street, the swirl of boiling molasses from 600 distilleries, all of them heady and full and rich, and none of them able to cut through the rancid stink of Bloombeck's odor. You're still here.
40 breaches, Padma! This is all completely on the level!
Your level isn't even level. You're so crooked it defies physics.
But I know how to work an angle, and I got a winner. You just hear me out and you'll see.
If you know about the breaches, why do we need to bribe anyone?
What do you mean?
I mean 40 people wanting to jump ship. Even on one of those big colony cedars, someone would hear the grumblings and do something to shut it down. Call in some ghosts.
Yeah, but this far out, with the little traffic we get now... You really think the big three care about us anymore?
I don't see Wawa closing up Throne Hill or slowing their demand for Arcane. But still, even if this magical 40 avoid attention, how would they get down here? They wouldn't steal a shuttle or do anything flashy. They'd hide in an empty fuel tank or a cargo can or something that would let them avoid attention. They might even follow your lead and slip down through the bilge on garbage day.
Hey, that worked, didn't it?
By accident, if I remember your story correctly. Still, it's got me thinking about bribing the radar control officer.
Well, somebody's got to cover for those people.
That's a union job. And can you think of anyone in the union who'd pass on information about 40 breaches when they could keep it for themselves? You walk into a union hall with all those fresh bodies, people are going to fall over each other to get you whatever you wanted. Wouldn't you? It was a nice try, Bloomy.
Don't you want to make your number?
Of course I do, but I still want to respect myself in the morning.
You think you're so hot with your payout and your brown nosing with Tangao? Like you've ever done anything for us here. You're just ready to live it up in Chino Cove with all the other co-op fat asses.
I left my fist where it was on the bar top, and despite the stench, put my face right in Bloombeck's. He flinched. Up until now, I have been practicing some restraint because Big Lily doesn't like fights in her place and I don't want to get on her bad side. That's why I am going to use my words. I let you slide on dues, Bloomy, because it's not worth the effort to chase you down. You don't register on the union's bottom line the same way you didn't register with your employer when you breached. If you did, you think they would have let you roam around in your ship's bilge? But when you annoy me like this, you make me wonder if maybe it would be worth squeezing that cash out of you just because I'd have an excuse to kick your ass from one side of the island to the other. It's like when the big three decide they need to make a show and send out ghost squads to sabotage each other. Or when they get their goons to crack down on indentures so they don't get ideas about breaching. You ever seen a goon work somebody over with a riot club, Bloomy?
Uh-uh.
I have. I had to take a lot of classes in hostile negotiation in business school, and I did really, really well. You want to see what I learned?
Uh-uh.
Then get lost! Bloombeck's eyes opened wide, and he tumbled over himself and a couple of seats on his way out. I sat back, blinking up a link to the public and loading up the traffic queue from the top of the lifter. All the ships coming and going from Santee Anchorage lay there, listed in neat little rows, a spreadsheet that could tell all kinds of stories if you knew how to read it. 10 years ago, that story would have been one of scrapes with goons and derring do on the high seas, of fishing breaches out of the ocean like pickles from a barrel. Now, there were only half a dozen supercarriers swinging by to grab a few billion barrels of industrial molasses, and those beasts barely needed to refuel from our ocean. There were 4 colony seeders en route for refueling, but there was no way to tell of any of them where the ship Bloombeck had talked about. I scrolled them away until I saw the ships I knew were the real deal. I'd dug their names out of news reports, stolen Big Three financials, and all the gossipy whispering that traveled around occupied space faster than light. I smiled as I saw them. 15 Liao Kan Xinjiang-class ore processors coming in from Nanchu. 15 claustrophobic nightmares filled with choking gases and horrible rations, and enough people who would want to jump ship even if there weren't a sprawling city at the bottom of the anchor. I had been making payments to people who ran orbital traffic control, enough for them to run broadcasts on my behalf and keep quiet. There was always a chance they could screw me over at the last minute, but that was a risk worth taking. Besides, the messages they'd broad-blasted into space made a point of telling people to ask for me by name, all but ensuring I'd get the credit for them joining the Union. I watched the queue for a few more minutes. The Liao Kan ships were still 4 hours away. A little tight for my timing, but I'd be able to take care of business before the miners started their descent. Business. Gah. I blinked up the time. 4:15. Damn Tongao for ditching me at the last minute. How a woman that scatterbrained could make a rum as good as old Windswept was a mystery. How she managed to keep her distillery running was an even bigger mystery. She'd been doing something right, though. For her to keep producing as well as she did, and as long as she kept it together, long enough for me to buy the place off her, I could make sure there was always a steady supply of old Windswept. My scalp tingled at the thought of the still running dry. I sipped my tea, but it was too late. My fingers grew cold and my eyeballs watered, and that voice scraped across the back of my brain.
You really think they're going to make it? You pushed away a good thing with Bloombeck like you push away everything good. And now Tongao's not here, and you'll never make it to 6:00.
I waved for Big Lily to bring me another tea. The breeze blew through the seaward windows again, carrying the cool green from the rice wheat paddies and the cane fields way out in the Kampong, the bite from cane diesel engine exhaust, the heavy tones of coral carbon being spun into lifter cable. The first breaches had called it getting windswept, back when they came down the cable and decided that their lives were worth more than their indentures to the Big Three. It sure as hell beat holing up in Throne Hill on the corporate side of the fence with the office drones, all of them breathing triple-scrubbed air, and never getting a noseful of this. I forced myself to relax, tamping back the fear. I would not let it get out. Not today. Big Lily walked up with my tea. One of these days, I really will call Sony to bust that twerp.
I would think Captain Bagram would be busy fighting real crime.
Big Lily set down the mug.
Besides, you'd have to catch him doing something illegal. And I don't think even Bloombeck is stupid enough to try that in here.
Sony and I are good enough friends that she'd do that for me. Especially if I paid her off.
I'm sure she'd charge you a pretty penny to lock him up. Save your money. It's not worth dipping into your budget for the likes of Bloombeck.
Lily got a fresh bottle of Nelson's Column from underneath the bar.
You want a little extra?
You know I don't drink until after 6:00.
Yeah, though I've never understood why.
Girl's got to keep some mystery.
What's the fun in that?
She opened the bottle. Some of the rum splashed on the bar top. What? Then the smell hit me, like mustard and raw sewage. My eyes watered as my throat tightened.
Oh, Christ, Lily!
People ran for the windows, and someone hit the massive fans that kept the place cool during the peak of summer. The air freshened, though the stink lingered, the puddle staining the bar top's finish with yellow streaks. Big Lily capped the bottle.
You ought to tell your friends in the co-op about that!
I eyed the stain. What looked like steam rose from its lightning surface. What, you two?
Me what?
Everyone thinks I have some magic pull with the co-op just because I'm talking with Tongao. Lily grabbed a rag to clean the bar, eyeing the discoloration. Then she tossed the skunk bottle in the bin and pulled up Beaulieu's blend instead.
Well, I hope you work things out with her. You've been talking about buying her place as long as she's been talking about retiring. And better you than someone else. She makes a hell of a rum, and I'd like it to stay that way.
Big Lily didn't know the half of it. I eyed the Beaulieu's and blinked up the clock. 4:27. Jesus. I blinked up the two numbers that ruled my life, the number of people I'd recruited into the union, and my cash reserve. I knew both numbers by heart, since they hadn't changed in the past 6 months. 467 and 120,300. I'd fought like hell to get those people included in my headcount, and I'd scrimped to keep that bank account as filled as possible. It was enough money to buy out Tongao now, but I needed the pension and completion bonus to get through the first few years of production. And I wouldn't get there until I'd recruited 500 people. It was so close I could taste my first batch of old windswept. Those mining ships would come in, those people would emerge from the can with my name on their lips, and I'd never have to deal with this crap ever again.
You looked at your numbers again?
You bet I did.
Just don't go crazy with it.
Lily poured a splash of Beaulieu's into a rocks glass and gave it a swirl.
Take it from a shareholder who's been in your shoes. What you do for the union is important, but being your own boss? That's more important. At least Bill Beaulieu is still up to standard.
I'm sure he'd be thrilled to hear that.
Yeah, he was a breech once, just like you, just like me. He came here with nothing, did the same shit work we all did, and he earned his way up and out. If a nice guy like him can make it, you're a shoo-in.
I blinked away my numbers. It hasn't happened yet. Besides, those people might not breach after all. Some other recruiter might nab them for their headcount. Carmody or Leslie Pike. Even Neil Schoon might rouse himself from his tomato patch to get him.
Or Sarian.
Especially Sarian. You know how many breaches he's pinched from me?
I think we all do, Padma.
Every time I've gotten close to adding someone to my headcount, he snatches them away. Like those economists. You have any idea what we could do with that kind of expertise in Brushhead?
Nope.
Me neither. But I'd have done something with them. Instead, he keeps them all working in that death trap he calls a refinery, sucking away funding from the rest of us. Hell, now he's talking about turning Sow's Reach into an artisan community.
That'd be something.
He stood up at the last union board meeting and said, "We need to acknowledge and nurture our innate creativity." Walked away with 100,000 yuan to make glassware or some crap like that, just because he has the highest headcount on the planet.
I know he's pissed you off by poaching bodies from you, but that's how it was even during the peak times. Everyone wants out of their slots, and recruiters want to make their numbers.
Yeah, but does he have to be such a dick about it?
Evan Root Sarian may be an asshole, but he's a loyal asshole.
To himself, sure.
And to the union. He's gone to the mat for his people, got his head cracked in the same picket lines as the rest of us. He may get wrapped up in all his speeches about the struggle, but we're on the same side, Padma.
His ego crowds out anyone else on his side.
You sure you're not pissed because of what he used to do? A little transference, maybe?
Sarian isn't the only former corporate recruiter here. What about Shanice Lau? I used to hang out with her a lot.
You used to get in fights with her a lot. Remember that year I banned you both from here?
She started it. Saying I didn't pay attention to my ward. What the hell did she know?
My point, Padma, is that while I can appreciate your desire to get your payout, there's still plenty here to focus on. Shanace was right. Your ward has to come first.
If you're trying to tell me to go along with Bloombeck for the good of the ward...
Oh, hell no. But what you did for Odd, that's what you should be doing more of. Especially since it gets you stuff like this.
Big Lily put a plate of Kumara cakes before me.
Oh, you are a doll.
I broke open a cake. The hot filling burned my tongue. Big Lily shook her head, then took a fluted tasting glass off the rack behind her. She set it down in front of me, next to the bottle of Beaulieu's.
I told you it's not after six.
I reached for another cake.
It's not for you.
Big Lily nodded to the other end of the room. I followed her chin and saw a guy sitting by the window. He wasn't really my type, but he had a chest like a rum barrel and eyes that didn't look too hard.
He's been watching you all afternoon.
You have the best way of looking out for your customers.
It's my job to know what my customers need.
Big Lily threw me a wink and walked to the other end of the bar. I grabbed my tea and the bottle and the glass and walked over to the window. The man with the not hard eyes looked up at me, then flicked his eyes at the rum.
I like your taste.
It's not my favorite. I sat down across from him. He had a circle of stars around his union ink, the sign of someone who'd put in time on the anchor. But I still like to share it. I poured him a shot of Beaulieu's.
Sharing's good.
So am I. We clinked glasses. The only good thing about my former employer damaging my brain was that I didn't need an alarm clock. My eyes popped open just before Louise Ellison, the muezzin, started the evening mug rub.
Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar. Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah.
The Emerald Masjid stood two blocks away from my building, and its speakers were just in line with my second-story flat. It was like she was in my ear, calling me to prayer along with the rest of the faithful. I blinked up a clock. 5:42. Almost time. I slipped out of my bed and into my bra and pants. As I pulled on a shirt, Anchor Boy stirred, one muscled arm flopping over where my waist would have been. He had been good, really good, and I really didn't want to wake him and send him packing. Still, 6 o'clock was 6 o'clock, and I wasn't in the mood to explain what was about to happen. I grabbed his shoulder and shook him. He blinked, trying not to be too obvious about pulling up my profile and name.
Padma.
Very polite. It's time to go.
Hey, you're right. Happy hour's about to start over.
No, not time for us to go, just you.
I do something wrong?
Nope. You were great. But I need to be alone now. Anchor Boy gave me a smile, which evaporated when I didn't return it. He shrugged. For a brief moment, when he pulled on his shorts and reached for his coveralls, I thought about saying, no, please stay. I never had company at 6 o'clock, and he'd been so attentive in the sack. Maybe it would be the same when we had our clothes on. No, I had to do this alone or it wouldn't work. That's what Dr. Ropata had said, and he'd been right about everything else so far. I leaned against the doorframe, my hands behind my back, watching Anchor Boy get dressed. Be careful up there. Wouldn't want you to lose focus and press the big stop button.
It's actually a series of switches.
He grabbed his deck jacket and walked to the door.
I don't suppose there's any point in asking if I can call you?
You can try. My pie's a little messed up, though.
Uh-huh. Look me up if you ever get it fixed.
I counted to five before leaping up and locking the door. I pulled every window shade closed, but for the one in my tiny sitting room, the one that looked out over all of Santee City, clear to the ocean, and the massive lifter complex offshore. It was a view that would have cost a fortune, but for the fact that Marjorie Ling, the landlady, was one of the first breeches I fished out of the water after I became a recruiter. She still threatened to raise my rent to match the market every year, But a bottle of still-standing silver and the reminder that she owed my ass kept the price under control. Marjorie gouged the bejesus out of her other tenants to make up for it. The row houses of Brushhead rolled away on the gentle hills until they ran into the cane plants in Budvar and Fauchway. In the mornings, when the breeze came off the ocean, the smell of molasses and cooking sugar would drift up from the exhaust vents, overpowering every other scent my neighbors made. On some days, like the middle of summer when the refinery at Sow's Reach had busted and no one had taken a shower in weeks, the smell from the cane plants was the best thing in the world. It was also a better alarm clock than any chimes my pie made, despite my turning off that option years ago. I watched the sun begin its dip toward the horizon, and the water in the Ivory Canal sparkled like a billion 50-jowl coins. In the middle of the canal were the rusting boxes of Partridge Hutong, my first home when I came to Santee, and I had to admit, even they looked good in this light. There was no way in hell I'd ever go back there, of course, same as I'd never go back to night shifts at the water treatment plant that had given Brushhead its name. I couldn't see the plant from my window, and that was a bonus. The pile of rusting pipes and misshapen holding tanks made Partridge look like a palace. The plant may have kept everyone employed, but that didn't mean I had to love it. Not like I loved the rest of the ward. The gentle glow sparkled off the rooftops as the neon signs of the bars, strip clubs, and churches winked on. Somewhere out there, shifts were changing, people were going to or from work, opening bottles of rum, or throwing away the dead soldiers. I watched the light glint off the lifter ribbon, then closed the last shade, turning the room completely dark. The blackout shades had cost a month's wages, but they worked better than my old method of tacking heavy blankets over the windows. Looked nicer, too. I sat at the kitchen table and reached under, found the candle and bottle I kept there, and set them both in front of me. The candle was from an old hurricane kit, one that had been used and refilled a dozen times so far. It wasn't important. The bottle was. It had a triangular base and was made from bumpy, green-blue glass. The bottle's label was a cartoon of a woman's foot propped up on a lanai railing, overlooking the coast at Satakoi, a few clicks north of here. It was quite a pretty foot, manicured and smooth, and there was a string tied to the big toe. At the other end of the string was a box kite, high up in the cartoon sky, pushed about by some men in clouds blowing on the thing. I had been using this bottle of old windswept for the past year, and it would last me another 6 months if I was careful. And I was always careful. The bottle was cool and comforting in my hand, like a heat sink drawing away all the tension from the workday. Hour after hour of dealing with angry people unhappy with their shifts, their supervisors, their contract slots, and, just for extra texture, having to fend off Vitae Bloombeck. I winced at the stabbing pain in my right eye. God, just thinking about him made my pie twitch. Terrific. The pain receded, and I blinked back the video buffer to earlier this afternoon. I watched Bloombeck's offer again, just to remind myself that turning him down had been the right thing to do. Then I blinked it off. Enough. I caught a lick of afternoon breeze and smiled. The same wind had caught me the first time I'd stepped out of the Wawa office in Thronehill, and I hadn't looked back. I could do the same with Bloombeck's deal. I could do the same with the fear, scraping around up in there, especially now that it was 6 o'clock. I lit the candle, and it sent out a warm yellow glow, like my flat was inside a stick of butter. I watched the flame dance to my breath, then closed my eyes and did what Dr. Ropata prescribed all those years ago. I imagined me sitting at my table, the candle and bottle in front of me. Then I let the camera in my mind pull back until I was outside my building, looking down over Brushhead. Then farther back until I could see the entire city below me, a smudge of buildings and streets in the middle of hectares and hectares of swaying green industrial sugarcane stalks. Then even farther back, until I was above Santee Anchorage, where I could see the thin black line of the lifter reaching up to the orbital anchor, now surrounded by ships coming and going. Then out into open space, watching my solar system's four other planets and yellow sun shrink to tiny points as my mind traveled beyond the red line where it was safe enough to jump between systems. And farther still, until I could see all of occupied space, the stars and planets where people had made their way, where the Big Three tried to buy and sell everything and everyone, where other Union people fought and worked and lived and died. And then all the way out and out and out to the vast, limitless reaches of the universe in all its wonder, its glory, its beauty. I opened my eyes, then unscrewed the bottle. The cinnamon and pear scents from the old windswept washed over me, and I lifted the bottle to my lips, remembering Dr. Ropata. Just enough to taste, not enough to call a drink. It was a fine line, but I'd had enough practice. The carillon at Our Lady of the Big Shoulders began to chime. What the hell? Vespers wasn't for another hour, and even then, this was a Wednesday. Louis Kwan, the organist, had the day off, and he only sat down to play if something big was going on. Then I recognized the music. Eternal Father Strong to Save. As he rolled around to the end of the first verse, I knew there'd be people in the city taking off their hats and singing along. O grant thy mercy and thy grace to those who venture into space. There must have been one hell of a mess up in orbit. Still, there was nothing I could do on the ground, so I lifted the bottle. For a brief moment, I hoped it was someone just adding a grace note to the proceedings, but then I recognized the tune. One that Big Lily and the rest of the old miners would play whenever one of their number died. I went to the window, pulled open the blinds, and looked a few blocks west to where Big Lily's bar was. The ships that had gone down must have been miners. I'd have to go back to Big Lily's to pay my respects, but only after I'd taken this sip and... Mining ships. Oh, shit. I blinked up a link to the public and loaded the traffic queue. I scrolled until I saw them. The 15 Liao Khan ore processors, now at the top of the lifter, waiting to offload, and... One by one, the names blinked, then turned blood red. Within a minute, all 15 ships were listed as lost in transit with all hands. 462 souls. Oh, those poor fucking people.
And those 27 you'd counted on.
I looked at the bottle of old windswept, then blew out the candle and got up. It wouldn't do me a bit of good now, not with the sinking feeling in my gut over all those deaths, combined with my rising anger at how they probably died. Liao Khan padded their bottom line by skimping on maintenance, by using cheap materials, by running ships 20 years past their hull's expiration dates. 462 people, all worked to death just to make some fucking Liao Khan shareholders a few extra yuan. Hell, even the ship's potential destruction was probably part of some actuarial equation, a loss against future profits. I pulled on my cargo trousers and boots, well worn and almost ready for a resole. Then my deck jacket, the one I'd borrowed from Wash 11 years ago and had forgotten to return. Union people would always pause for a remembrance, but they sure as hell wouldn't stop. The city was in the middle of a shift change, and that meant everyone was moving. It would be the perfect time to get in touch with someone inside Thronehill, one of those now-thawed fish sticks who'd realized how screwed they were and wanted to poke back at their corporate masters. Problem was, it would take days to get in touch with someone friendly, and that was just to put out feelers about possible breaches. Getting hard data, that could take weeks. Hell, it had taken 6 months just to learn about the Liao Khan ships. Could I wait another 6 months? Seven? A year? My head buzzed with a text from Estella Tongao, apologizing profusely about missing our meeting because of a mishap at the distillery. And if it wasn't a problem, could we reschedule for tomorrow or until after she'd stopped the imploding piping?
Why bother? You'll never be able to buy her place now with those ships lost. And what'll you do if you can't get your daily snort?
There was another text. And did I get her gift? I hopped downstairs. Mrs. Karpinski, one of my neighbors, sat on the front stoop. In one hand, she held a smoldering pipe. In the other, a small package wrapped in orange paper.
Evening.
She had a compass tattooed on her cheek, evidence of her long days as a ship's navigator for Liao Khan.
Courier dropped this off for you. I was going to bring it up after I finished my evening constitutional.
That stuff's going to kill you, Mrs. K.
If all those cosmic rays haven't done me in, a little tobacco sure as shit won't do the job.
She handed me the package. The paper was tucked into tight folds, and it looked too expensive to tear open. I carefully undid the folds.
If you don't want that paper, I'll take it.
Be my guest. Inside was a coral steel flask.
Ooh.
There was no inscription on it, but I didn't need one. I unscrewed the cap. The smell of old windswept washed over me. I offered Mrs. K the flask.
Oh, that is lovely. That from Tongao?
It is. I pocketed the flask. Her way of apologizing for canceling on me. It's been happening more than I'd like.
You worried she's gonna sell to someone else?
Yes!
Nah.
I wouldn't either. We used to work together at the refinery at Buke's Point, you know that?
I didn't.
Oh, yeah. Estella pissed off one supervisor after another because she insisted that her way of doing things was the best. Once she made up her mind, she wasn't going to change it. I don't think buying that distillery has altered her thinking. If she's going to sell to you, she's going to sell to you. But I'd make sure I send her a thank you note pretty damn pronto.
I gave Mrs. K a kiss on the head and walked down the steps. I started blinking in a text to Tongao, making sure to use proper spelling and grammar. Ever since I first met her, Tongao insisted on propriety, and I liked that about her.
Of course I can reschedule. Maybe tomorrow at 10:30?
When I had first heard rumors about her retiring last year, I had barged my way into her distillery to demand she sell to me at bulk rates. She just smiled and offered me tea and cakes and made me feel welcome, despite the fact that I had behaved like a complete ass. I made up some story about how I appreciated her rum and wanted to make sure it didn't change. Okay, that wasn't a complete fabrication. I just didn't tell her why. I willed the fear away, sending it deep into whatever pit it hid in. This was no time to listen to the fear. This was the time to make sure I could buy the distillery, even if that meant my only lead was, and it hurt like hell to admit this, Vitai Bloombeck. Even though I knew he was full of shit, it was better than nothing. I blinked up the time, 6:15. The bars and cafes and strip joints would be full, which meant Bloombeck would be trolling, probably down at the shabbier end of Murdoch Street. I wasn't in the mood to walk there, so I ducked through alleys until I was on Sway Street. I raised my hand to hail a tuk-tuk, and a bright green job ripped out of traffic and bumped over the curb in front of me. Murdoch and Kadaly in Floret.
Meter's busted.
The tuk-tuk driver was a skinny girl with streaks of grease and a pair of wheels inked on her cheeks.
The trip will cost you $2.50.
Yeah, that's a little cheap, but what the hell? I got out 3 yuan and held them up to her. The driver looked at the bills like they were dead fish.
$250?
Really? I blinked up the girl's face on the public. No hits, which was a neat trick for a union hack. I didn't get a handshake from her pie, either. I peered closer at her ink and saw it had been made with a pen, not with a needle. If she wasn't a runaway from the Kampong, I'd buy a hat just to eat it. How do you figure?
Shifts have changed, so all the other drivers are doing the commuter thing. You're on business, because no one who looks like you would go to that neighborhood for fun.
I glanced at the empty cane class envelope on the dash where her hack license should have been. Sounds like you've got me twigged for a rube.
Nah, just desperate. I know my customers.
Then you should know this. I reached into my pocket and pulled out my union card, the one with ward chair written on it in large don't fuck with me letters. The driver's eyes flickered from me to the card and back again.
No charge. Would you like me to wait while you conduct your business?
That would be lovely. I licked my thumb. One more thing. I reached over the seat and swiped her cheek clean. You really ought to use a permanent marker. Union hacks aren't crazy about fakes.
Right.
She stomped on the gas and shot us into traffic. Brushhead had been awake all day, but the place really came alive at night. As we zipped down the sloped streets, barkeeps opened their windows as merchants hosed off their sidewalks. The neon glow from the theaters blinked on with the sodium lamps, and the crushed coral pavement smelled wet and tangy. We drove along the Ivory Canal onto Klipner Road, past the swing shift gangs heading for their gigs on the cable or at the cargo depot, or any of the hundreds of places that union people still had jobs. How long you been off the farm, kid?
6 weeks.
Your family know you're in the big bad city?
They're too busy with crops. We get some kind of fungus, and I got sick of dealing with it.
Intriguing, but that doesn't answer my question.
I'll be home for harvest.
You want to stay in Brushhead?
Uh-huh.
I blinked a picture of her. What's your name?
Jilly.
Jilly what?
Just Jilly.
I've never been a fan of the freeborn way of single names. I attached a note to her photo. Get her job, surname. We slowed behind a convoy of lorries stacked high with cane. Okay, just Jilly, if you can get me to where I want to go in the next 5 minutes, I might forget to log this whole conversation.
You got it. Mind if I put on some music?
As long as it's got a good beat, fine. Jilly knocked on the dashboard, and the sounds of a bong orchestra thrummed from beneath the seats. Jilly stomped on the gas, and the tuk-tuk hopped onto the sidewalk. We skidded around a corner and down into the dirtier part of Brushhead. Murdoch Street was half a block long and always felt like a cave. There was something about the way the buildings smashed together, the way the roof lines leaned out into the street, the way the sun never hit the sidewalk, that made the whole place feel like it should have been a mushroom farm instead of a collection of rundown bars. It wasn't scary, so much as it was depressing as hell. Despite decades of the union, the co-op, and even Wawa trying to fix the place up, it never changed. This was where the people who fell through the cracks got stuck. It was also one of the few places in the entire city where Vitai Bloombeck was allowed to loiter. Jilly pulled up the parking brake. The warm glow of early evening bathed Kadaly Boulevard in deep golden light, none of which crossed into Murdoch. Even the bare fluorescent bulbs in front of the bars couldn't hold back the murk.
You sure about this, boss?
Relax, kid. You had plenty of dark nights out in the campong.
At least there I could see the stars.
Ow! It took 6 bars until I got a poke in the back of my eye. The place had 2 windows, one covered with a plywood sheet and the other in grime. It didn't even have a name, just a hand-scrawled paper sign above the door that said Drink. Figures Bloombeck would be in here. He wasn't an alcoholic, but the people he bothered usually were. 3 people looked up at me, their faces ghostly from the little bit of light that seeped in behind me. None of them had any ink. They were probably freeborn people who'd left the campong to look for work and wound up getting trampled. They all eyed me for a moment before huddling back over their drinks. The bartender, a man with an eclectic collection of facial scars, gave me a look, then nodded toward the back, where the darkness got even darker. I plunged into the middle of a sea of tiny tables, half of them covered with empties, and the other with unconscious people. Crouched over one of the drunks was Vitai Bloombeck. I put a hand on his shoulder, and he snapped upright.
I swear! He said it was his turn to pay!
Bloombeck held his hands over his head. A few ruined 5 yuan bills quivered in his grip. I pointed to an empty table. Sit!
So glad to see you, Padma.
Stop. I sat across from him. You are going to tell me everything you know about these breaches, and you are going to do it with a minimum of bullshit, or I call Captain Bagram to come down here and arrest you for rolling drunks. Start.
Okay. So, my guy...
Who is he?
Come on, Padma. You gotta give me something.
I tapped my temple, the universal sign for I'm making a call on my pie.
Jimny Potts! Jimny knows all about the ships with the breaches, I swear!
Bloody hell, Bloomy, Jimny owes me more than you do.
You think he don't know that? I seen his profile on the public. He's holed up tight in Thronehill. Thinks you won't go in there to get him.
But he saw you. If he's so busy hiding, why'd he take the risk to talk with you?
We're old pals, you know. We shared that flat in Partridge Hutong after you moved out,
Don't remind me. The way you were always banging around at all hours. Whatever shift I worked, you were always awake.
I had things to do.
So did I, and they usually involved getting a good night's sleep. What did Jimny tell you?
He was in between shifts in the burn room, and he overheard some security guys talking about beefing things up on the anchor because they wouldn't be able to catch the ship in transit. Even caught the name.
Which is?
Oh, no. Not until you help me out.
I told you that radar control thing won't work.
No, no. I got something better. I got this neighbor, Batona Snow, owns a plot of land out in the Kampong, a quarter hectare out at Sag Pond, right?
For what?
A little heirloom cane on the side. Nothing that'll get her in the co-op, but, you know. She's got a home still and makes an okay batch. I help her too sometimes. Anyway, a couple of years ago, this debris rains down on it from the corporate side of the fence, right? Wawa burning their weekly paperwork, and it just turns her crops to mush. Wipes it all out! Britona goes to her union rep.
Who is?
Evan Root Sarian. Britona works at Sow's Reach.
Oh, figures that asshat would be involved.
Oh, you still sore at him?
It's not worth getting into. Continue.
Anyway, Sarian says he'll bring it up with Wawa, and the whole thing would have gone away. Except just this evening, Britona says Wawa wants to buy her out. Huh? For $5,000.
And that's that. Wawa rains garbage on union grower, union beats up Wawa, grower gets compensation. The great circle of labor continues.
But isn't that a big deal?
No. They pay off farmers for bits of messed up land all the time, and $5,000's pocket change for Wawa.
No, no, wait. I always get that wrong. Isn't K supposed to be $1,000,000?
Bloomy, did Wawa pay off your neighbor with $5,000,000 you won?
Uh-huh.
Even the biggest cane plantations aren't worth a quarter mil. $5,000,000 for a lousy quarter hectare?
Ain't it all crazy?
Insane.
Britona, she takes the money, of course, and that's what got me thinking. We ought to get in on the same deal.
And what deal is that?
I'm getting bought out. That's why I want to give you this information about the breaches. It's collateral.
Bloomy, where do you keep getting all these big words? You're starting to scare me.
Like I said, I know how to work an angle. If I tell you about the breaches, then you owe me. And then you can pay me back by helping me buy a little cane farm that'll get stuff dropped on it so I can file a complaint and get bought out. Hell, we can even get some of that union infrastructure money to make improvements. And that'll mean we can even get more cash out of Wawa.
I looked at the rum behind the bar. It was past 6 o'clock, but getting drunk was beginning to look like a good idea. I'm still not clear where I come in.
I got an eye on one of these parcels off Satakoi.
What parcels?
The ones next to the old windswept distillery.
And what do you propose I do about that?
Well, I hear you're trying to buy the place.
Trying is not the same as owning, and I'm sure as hell not going to jinx the deal by bringing you into the mix.
I ain't going to ask for much. Like half a hectare.
That's more than I'd be willing to part with if it were my call, which it's not.
But it will be. And once Wawa drops stuff on it, I'll give you a cut of the settlement.
Even if this information were accurate, which I very much doubt, considering how much weed Jimny Potts smokes, it's not worth making a deal with you.
It could be.
Satakoi is upwind from Throne Hill. Did you think about that?
The wind could always change.
Oh, God. Fine, I'll do what I can, if I can.
Plus 300,000 yuan.
One of the things I learned in business school was how to deal with a ludicrous offer. You nodded like you were considering it, then you came back with an equally ludicrous counteroffer. I gave Bloomy the nod. Make it 150.
Hey, I'll go for
150, then a decimal point, then two zeros.
Who do you think I am, Padma? You think I'll stand for that kind of insult?
Yep.
Okay. I'll take it.
What do I get in return?
What do you mean?
You think I'm going to haul my ass all the way to Throne Hill and track down Jimny just on your say-so? You're going to have to do better than that.
Only if you make the deal. One of us got to blink it in.
150 yuan wasn't pocket change for me, but I could spend it without feeling too guilty. Fine. I blinked up the forms and filled in my data. I shot it over to Bloombeck, who took his sweet time filling in his part. He blinked the finished contract to me, and then I double-checked the thing, its ISO 20K compliant font hovering in the air. I would give him 150 yuan and help him secure a plot of land near Satakoi, and he would give me the name of the ship. Of course, I still have no way of trusting this information. I'm surprised Jimny even remembered who you were.
I got the proof, but it goes into escrow.
How you learned that word, I'll never understand. Okay. I blinked on my Pi's video capture, sending the feed straight to the public. I'm looking at Vitai Bloombeck, Partridge Hutong, Brushhead, Santee City. He and I have just struck a contract, transaction number whatever.
Hey, do it right.
I blinked up the contract number. I'm putting 150 yuan in escrow for the information he's selling me, and I'll release the funds upon delivery, blah, 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 boilerplate, blah, blah, blah.
And I'm looking at Padma Mehta, 42 Samarkand Road, Brushhead, Santee City, and I approve this contract.
God help me, so do I. We closed our feeds, and the escrow officer on duty checked out the deal. The approval blipped through, and Bloombeck stared at me.
Well?
Well, what?
Aren't you going to offer me a drink? You're always supposed to have a shot once you've closed the deal.
Only shot I'll give you is one to the nose.
I'm just saying, it's tradition.
Yeah, but not a good one.
All the same.
Bloombeck looked toward the bar and raised a finger. Oh, Jesus. Fine. I turned around and did the same. The bartender started to pour two shots from the bottle in front of him, then caught my glare and reached under the bar. The light glinted off the foil co-op seal on the new bottle's cap, and I nodded. I knew I couldn't afford to be choosy in a place like this, but I'd be damned if I was going to drink export rotgut. The bartender brought the bottle and two glasses to our table, then left when I handed him a tenner and a few 50 jiao pieces. Make with the proof, and it had better be solid.
The drink first?
I grabbed the bottle, a 750 of Nelson's Column, a silver. Deirdre Fantone, the distiller, used coral steel tanks for aging, so the rum had a sharp flavor, like getting punched in the face with a grapefruit. I imagined the cap was Bloombeck's neck as I twisted it and cracked the seal. My warm, fuzzy feeling vanished as the room filled with the smell of mustard gas and raw sewage. Oh!
Jesus!
Clear the room! Clear the room!
I grabbed Bloombeck by the scruff of his neck and hauled him out. Outside, the air wasn't much better, but at least it didn't make my eyes burn. I still had the bottle in my hand. Most of the rot gut had swished out as I ran. I held the bottle up to the light and saw black flakes and oil slicks swirling inside. I blinked a picture and sent it to Tongao, along with a note, co-op product going bad, before tossing the bottle into a nearby storage crate that was acting as a public trash can.
What was that?
Nothing that's relevant. Ship name, now.
Okay.
He then looked away. You do have proof, right? Because if you don't, you know the law says I can have that contract voided and be allowed to kick your ass all over the island.
It's with Jimny. He insisted.
Jimny Potts doesn't know how to insist.
Still, it's with him, in Throne Hill. Guess we're going on a field trip, huh?
No, I am. You wait here. I'm going to show Jimny a new meaning of the word insist.
I really think I should go with. Me and Jimny, we're pals. I worry.
That's what I like about you, Bloomy. You care. Jilly huddled up in the front seat of the tuk-tuk. She took one look at Bloombeck.
That isn't riding in my rig.
Watch your mouth, Scab.
Now, is that any way to talk to a future member of our union?
Some muck scratcher from the Kampong's gonna come into our union?
Bloomy, if we can let you in, we can sure as hell let her in. I patted Jilly on the shoulder. Fastest way to Walwai HQ, kid. And just ignore him, I usually do.
Why aren't you now?
Business trumps hygiene. Drive. Jilly shook her head, but pulled a Yui onto Gadeli and headed toward the setting sun. We bumped over the Sway Street Bridge, across the green waters of the Ivory Canal, and sped up the road to Throne Hill. If Brushhead's crammed architecture and riot of smells were one end of the Santee Anchorage experience spectrum, then Throne Hill was the polar opposite. Every corner was planned down to the millimeter. Its buildings were all square, squat, and made of the same gray pore form. It was built entirely by Walwa people, and it felt it. The air was cold and clammy, and made me want to huddle inside my deck jacket, even though it was summertime. Whether it was a trick of microclimate or some urban heatsink effect, I was never sure. I hated coming here. The fear loved it. After a brief drive through the edges of the Kampong, we came to the district gate. A lone Walwa security goon stood in front of us, mirrored helmet shield flipped up, his riot hose trained on us.
This district is closed to non-essential personnel.
At least I think it was a he. I knew there were women who became goons, but the armor and steroids made it tough to tell them apart. I put my union card in his face. I'm as essential as they get, stud. Shift it. The goon took a step back, blinking like crazy as he tried to make sense of my card and the messages it triggered in his pie. I waved it around, his beady eyes following.
Still need to see a work order.
Okay. I tucked the card back into my pocket. Say, what kind of armor are you wearing?
What?
Armor, stud. What kind?
Mark 6.
Uh-huh. Good to know. The emergency release is still exposed on the Mark 6s. I grabbed two red tabs on his armor and yanked as hard as I could. The cane plas plates fell to the ground, leaving him naked to the breeze. I jumped in the tuk-tuk. Make sure to ask for an upgrade. Might save your life. I patted Jilly's shoulder, and we scooted into the frigid streets of Thronehill. I didn't have to tell her where the main office was. It was a good 10 stories taller than every other gray box of a building, and the street signs all pointed the way in giant orange letters. Even with the reduced transstellar traffic, there were hundreds of other Walwa departments in this district, all the good little indentures beavering away to fulfill policies that had probably changed while they were still in transit. Fewer and fewer of them got promotions that allowed them to flee up the cable, so it was just a matter of time before they all breached or sealed themselves inside the giant Colonial Directorate building so they could hide from the big bad world they pretended to manage. I already regret listening to you, Bloomy, and we've only just gotten here.
It'll be worth it. Pull up to the main office ahead, kid.
I know where it is.
You stay here. Bloomy, you really think they're going to let your spivey ass in there? This is official union business, and you are not a union official.
But how are you going to find Jimny?
I'll follow the smell. The main office loomed overhead, like someone had dropped a block of granite from orbit. It was one of the first structures to be built after the lifter, and it was a prime example of Big Three architecture. Take the worst of native materials and turn it into the least functional of buildings. The only things that worked were the elevators and the atmosphere purifiers. The black cane-plas doors slid open, and a blast of triple-scrubbed air from inside made my nose twitch. A pair of goons, their riot hoses at the ready, stood on either side of a battle axe of a receptionist. Hi, here on business. The receptionist held a scanner to the barcode.
Meta Padma, Santee Anchorage Freelancers Union, Level 3 Access.
Every piece of Big Three hardware that talked used what we called the Univoice. It bubbled out of all sorts of salvaged, obsolete, or stolen gear. It was one of the few Big Three bits of tech that didn't annoy me, though that didn't stop me from figuring out ways to make the Univoice cuss. You get all that?
I know who you are. I knew before you brought your air in with you.
Then you know to call off the steroid munchers. The goons tightened their grips. I blew one a kiss. Jimny Potts owes me dues. I'll find my own way. The receptionist twitched, making the Walwa logo inked on her cheek crinkle.
Follow the lighted path, or we cannot be held responsible for what happens.
I appreciate the thought. I scratched my cheek with my middle finger right on my union fist. The receptionist sneered and stabbed a button on her desk. A line of golden tiles lit up, snaking past the desk and into the bowels of the main office. I waved at the goons as I followed the yellow brick road. The interior halls were painted stomach-churning shades of brown and red, like someone had thrown a dozen hedgehogs in a blender and smeared the results on the walls. Some genius in Walwa's work environment conditioning division had probably done a study to figure out what colors made people feel small and insignificant, and had come up with this result. The lit tiles ended outside a janitor's closet. The scents of chiba and body odor leaked out from underneath. I didn't bother to knock. Jimny Potts sat on an overturned pail, his eyes unfocused and bloodshot, and locked on the wall opposite him. He wore bagasse pulp paper coveralls, filthy with black soot. A tarnished metal nameplate that said Potts hung from his chest pocket.
Jimny! Jimny! He
jumped, then looked around the room until his eyes focused on me.
Hey, Padma. Aren't you out of your ward?
Delinquent dues hurt us all, Jimny.
Oh, yeah.
He was blinking a little too slowly.
I'll get it. It's just I got a wife, 4 kids. There's only so much cash to go around.
And you wouldn't have any cash at all without your union gig. I wondered who in hell would marry Jimny, let alone reproduce with him.
Oh, yeah. Hey, the union's done all right by me, Padma.
And you can do right by the union by telling me what you told Bloombeck about that cedar.
Oh, I don't know about that. But you know, maybe if there's a finder's fee...
Jimny, who do you think pays that fee?
Oh, yeah. That's really deep, Padma. It's all a big cycle.
Right, and the big cycle needs new members, and new members might be arriving on that colony cedar. What can you tell me about them?
The ship's got a real pretty name.
I thumped the door and his whole body shook.
I know! Tell me about the breaches.
What?
The breaches on the colony cedar.
What colony cedar?
The one making the water drop in 6 days.
What do you want to know about that?
Everything.
Yeah, okay. Okay. Last week, I was cleaning the executive lounge, working the stalls, you know?
Not really.
I had the stall door closed so I could scrub off the graffiti.
The only graffiti in this building was written by me. I made a point of freshening it up every few months, just to remind the Walwa people the union was there, ready for them if they ever wanted to join. Sorry, go on.
So, I got the door closed, and these guys come in, and they're talking about this ship having crew trouble. And I caught the name.
Which is? I blinked up the shipping queue. I'd spent the past 6 months focusing on the mining ships and hadn't bothered to pay attention to everything else in transit. Damn it! I saw there were a lot of blank data fields. No way to tell which was the cedar.
Yeah, and then a few days later, I'm in the burn room, sweeping the shreds back to the fire before I leave my clothes behind.
Hold it. You leave your clothes behind?
Yeah. Always burn it at the end of the week. Walwa policy. Plus, I don't have to do laundry.
Of course.
So, I'm sweeping the shreds, finishing up, and these two goons are walking outside the burn room, and I hear them talking. They're all worked up because they got this security alert saying there are, like, 40 people causing trouble on this ship. I hear them say it's on the way.
What is its name, and when is it making its fuel drop?
Oh, wow. Hold on. Let me think. Oh, numbers make my head hurt.
I wondered if this happened to anyone in a citywide office. Is this why my boss had wanted to spend all his time in the local titty bars instead of being out in the field?
I got it. The Rose of Tralee. They were making landfall today.
Today? Bloombeck told me it was in 6 days.
Hey, how is he? I haven't seen him in, like, almost a week. Said he was buying next time we got together. Is he here? Should we go say hi?
Before Jimny could move, I barricaded him in with a trash barrel.
Hey! Oh, come on, Padma. Don't be like that. Let me out of here.
He'd get out eventually, but right now I had to lose as much dead weight as possible. I blinked up the queue again, and there it was, an hour from hitting orbit. The Rose of Tralee, a Walwa colony cedar fresh from good luck, bound for someplace in the beyond. Now Bloombeck's story made sense. Santee wasn't popular for local traffic, but it was one of the last fuel stops before jumping past the boundaries of occupied space. Leaving Santee was, essentially, a one-way trip. That, plus all that travel time, 2 years out of good luck to jump, then 2 years to here, then 2 more years to the Red Line and beyond, gave the crew plenty of time to contemplate how long and shitty the voyage ahead could be. Plus, 40 breaches. That would easily put me over the top, plus give me a few breaches to pass on to other recruiters to put them in my debt. I'd always have a need for labor, union or otherwise, and it would go a long way toward helping the distillery succeed. Still, Jesus,
just like Bloombeck to get his timing messed up. This would have been great news a week ago. Now it was just a potential pain in my ass. I slipped outside the main building and ran to the tuk-tuk.
Padma, I've been thinking, it's not fair the price we agreed on. I want to up it to $350.
Drive, head for the coast. Jilly stomped on the gas and dodged a caravan of Walwa indentures biking toward the main office. Then we skidded around a corner.
Anywhere in particular, boss?
Sow's reach and go faster than you did before.
You got it.
Jilly steered us onto the sidewalk. We passed the line of vehicles at the exit cordon, and I waved to the still-naked goon as we bounced onto Brapati Causeway. The tuk-tuk's engine didn't let up until the first whiffs of rotting sugar hit us 36 minutes later. The recovery launches weren't so much boats as they were planks with delusions of seaworthiness, and the sailors lounging around were in danger of being overrun by empty rum jugs. None of them looked competent or sober enough to do anything, which made things that much easier when a black and yellow police bumble car came to a dead halt in front of the recovery office. As soon as the cops cleared the dock, I tore a blue boy in half and gave one piece to Jilly. Find me something big enough to haul 40 people and you get the other half.
Really, boss? I can't.
Here. I held up two more C notes.
Never mind!
As she scurried away to steal something appropriate, I bounced to the launches. They were even more terrifying up close. Less ships than collections of scabby paint and rusted parts. I hopped onto the least cancerous of the boats, fired up the cane diesel engines, and hoped for the best as I cast off. I turned into open water. No one else in the harbor made a move toward the smoke columns, now turning white from steam. That was encouraging. No one from another ward had managed to get the jump on me, and the lack of Walwa traffic meant I just might pull this off. I cranked the throttle up to maximum. The smell of heated salt water filled my nose, along with boiled fish. Hot drops were hell on sea life. Soon the cans were in sight, four gray cylinders, each 30 meters long, bobbing along the swell, their heat shields acting as ballast. Scorch marks from the re-entry scored their sides, and I wondered if they were dropped on purpose or by accident. Drop cans could withstand the fall, but the G-forces were brutal to anyone stowing away inside. Most breeches preferred to hitch a ride just before the empty cans were strung on the lifter's downward cable, hoping the cans' shielding would protect them from Santee's Van Allen belts. Either was a tough way to jump ship. I pulled alongside the closest can and tossed cane rubber fenders over the side to keep the boat from smashing on the can's hull. Proper protocol for recovery involved a lot of decontamination and quarantine, but I was in a hurry. I grabbed the biggest wrench I could find on the launch.
Get us the hell out of here!
Us. Oh, that is a sweet sound. I scooted the launch up to an access hatch and rooted through the toolbox again, trying to find something to crack the seal with. All I came up with was a crowbar. Have to do. Anyone in there injured?
Yeah!
Excellent. I knew those how-to-breach pamphlets had been a good investment.
Good!
I tugged on the hatch as hard as I could. Ben! On behalf of the Santee Anchorage Local, of the Universal Freelancers Union, and the Ward of Brushhead, I'd like to offer you assistance. The hatch was open, and I was on my ass on the deck. When I stood up, five pasty people in damp Walwa coveralls looked up at me.
Okay, get on board and tell everyone else to step lively.
There's just us.
The woman was all muscle and had a patch over her right eye. Her face was bright red and wheeled by burn scars, crinkling what looked like a tattoo of crossed wrenches. For the briefest of moments, I thought I knew her. No, I knew I knew her, even though I had never met a one-eyed ship's engineer in my life. Was she someone from my days in the life corporate? No, that was impossible. No one from my previous life had ever breached. I held out a hand, and she took it. The others who followed were a pair of old ladies whose ink had faded, a gaunt white guy whose coveralls were three sizes too big, and a middle-aged woman dragging a body by the shoulders. They all huddled on the deck like sheep, glancing up at the sky, as if they expected a Walwa security boat to smash down on them.
Good. Now let's get the others.
What others?
The gaunt man had the name Banks stitched over his left breast pocket and scales tattooed on his cheek. A lawyer. Great.
There are supposed to be 40 of you.
Nope, just 6. Well, I guess that's if you want to include Tan.
He nodded at the body. I looked at him, then climbed over the lot of them to the hatch of the fuel can. There was nothing but the smell of rank seawater. The only pings I got were from these 6, and one had no life signs. I looked back at him.
My source told me that 40 of you were going to breach.
There were just the 6 of us awake. I mean, unless some of those fish sticks were thinking about it, but it's not like they could tell.
There were supposed to be 40 of you!
I'm sorry! I'm sorry!
The way his eyes went wide and watery told me enough. There were only 5 breaches, 6 with the corpse, and I was short of meeting my obligation. Vitae Bloombeck had lied to me, and worst of all, I'd fallen for it.
Ugh.
And then the breeze picked up, strong enough to blow away the smell of re-entry, boiled fish and carbon. It came from far out to sea, heavy with salt spray, just a little chill in the warm morning. Out of habit, I brought the smell through my nose and right into my brain. It had been so long since I'd been out on the open water that I'd forgotten just how clean the air was out here.
Well, this isn't what any of us were expecting, so let's just get to shore and we'll worry about the rest later. Is anyone injured? Ah!
I got a tickle behind my eye. It wasn't as bad as the Bloomy is nigh alert, but it was enough to make me nervous. Something was coming.
Gangway!
I steered us so the shoreline was in view and saw sunlight glint on the water. I blinked in a zoom and saw 4 Walwa skiffs zipping toward us.
Oh, shit!
Windswept is continued on the next CD.